All right, we are heading to the closing bell in roughly a minute and 20 seconds to help us make heads or tails of what's happened in the markets today, because we are trading higher into the close. Rhea Thomas, Wilmington Trust Senior Economist, and Ryan Newman, Zephyr Market Strategist. It's good to have you here. Rhea, I'm going to start off with you before we get to that closing bell. Markets seem to like what they heard from Jay Powell. Are they getting this right, or are they missing something? Is there something you paid attention to that we might have missed?
I think Chair Powell did his job. If his goal was to come in, communicate the plan to taper, and not upset the apple cart, he reiterated what Fed officials have been talking about for the past few months. I think he gave an indication that the Fed is still viewing inflation as transitory, but they are being humble about their view of inflation right now. And so he did give some indication that they will be watching for signs that inflation will be moderating towards the second half of next year. We do think that they did indicate also that they are in this sort of hybrid of taper pace, where they announce the pace for the next 2 months.
I got to cut you off right here because we're about to hit the closing bell. Here it is, everybody. We're closing up.
And that wraps up another record-setting day in Wall Street. Again, Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ all moving to the upside. The NASDAQ looks like it's going to close out above 1%. That's a 1% gain for the NASDAQ today. S&P up just around 0.6%, and the Dow, which had been off over 160 points in earlier trading, closing up just over 100 points. In terms of the sector action today, consumer discretionary materials, consumer staples, as well as technology leading the way. The laggards are energy by far, the XLE off nearly 1%. We're also seeing losses in utilities and industrials. But we want to bring back in our panel, Rhea Thomas and Ryan Nauman. Ryan, let me kick it over to you just in terms of what stood out to you that we heard from the Fed today, and I guess the Fed's tapering timeline and also the fact that we don't have anything really concrete when it comes to raising rates. Does that make sense to you, given where we are in this economic recovery?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. And really, there's three things that stood out to me. And number one in this statement was the flexibility. And Rhea also commented on this, that the Fed has baked in some flexibility here in their tapering. They were very clear that in November, December, exactly how much they're going to taper. After that, they did not put a dollar amount on it. So they added some flexibility, and a lot of it has to do with the uncertainty that has to go into inflation. And even though they said inflation is transitory, they added that word expected, which kind of hedges their bets a little bit and provides them some more flexibility. And finally, I think that third piece, and you just mentioned it, Shauna, is the timeline. They added more transparency, more clarity to their timeline, and the markets really like that, and we're seeing that in the performance today, right now. And that transparency showing that inflation, they're expecting inflation to start slowing during mid-2022 and Q2 quarter three. So now that the market's like that.
Rhea, in fact, nobody seems to be sounding the alarm over inflation. The chair said no signal regarding interest rate policy, but also pointed out that we should see inflation moving down by the second or third quarter, and that the inflation that we're experiencing right now is not due to a tight labor market. Is that setting us up, and does that give them room after June to say, okay, now we do have to do liftoff?
I do think that if it comes to June and we do have still elevated inflation, the risk is that they could pull their rate hikes forward. Two really important metrics to watch will be, of course, wage growth and also labor force participation. And on the labor force side, one of the things that we'll really be watching is these two dynamics that have been keeping the labor force depressed. One is retirement and the other is reassessment, R&R. And we think that if those two continue to remain a persistent drag on the labor force, that could mean that we're at maximum employment sooner than originally the Fed might have expected. So that's something that could bring that taper forward. And we may see pressure manifesting itself through higher wages. And he did mention that they are noticing that uptick. Not worrisome yet, but it's something they're keeping an eye out for.
Ryan, what's your assessment just of where we are in this jobs market recovery and also, I guess, the market's reading on this? Because we haven't seen the market be a little bit to be really too concerned at all about the fact that there's still 10 million plus job openings right now nationwide.
Yeah, that's a great question. And recently we've had some slowness in the market or labor market recovery. And we get a huge, very important number later this week on Friday. But there's a couple of things that are promising, and that's the continual fall in the unemployment claims. Unemployment claims continue to fall each week to pandemic lows. And then two, we got a very solid ADP report today, which signals some strength there. And Chairman Powell also mentioned that, you know, the jolts, the job openings outpace the number of people looking for jobs. The number of people quitting jobs is at historic highs. That signals a very strong labor market. So even though, you know, unemployment rate, and like you said, there's still 10 million people looking for jobs out there, the labor market is still on solid footing. And I do think the recovery looks strong moving forward.
Rhea, when we talk about Jay Powell, and I asked a previous guest this question, and that guest responded, he looked exhausted. Did he look exhausted to you? Does he look like somebody who really wants this job going into the next year?
I think, you know, he does look like he's still trying to do his job, stay in his place. And I think that he did his job effectively today in terms of shepherding this whole process, really, through the COVID experience and now into this place where the Fed can start that tapering process and start the process of normalizing policy. So he's been very clear, been straightforward with markets, and I think markets register that approval with a fairly sanguine reaction today.
Ron, as we do see the Fed start its process of getting back to normal policy that Rhea was just talking about, how do you think investors should be positioned over the next couple of months?
Yeah, I really think you need to focus on the yield curve. Look at, and it's happened recently, the yield curve has really driven the performance between growth and value recently. You know, a flat yield curve is going to benefit the growth stocks, technology names. Steeper yield curve is going to benefit the cyclicals and financials. So focus on the yield curve. But at the end of the day, I really think, and based on, you know, when you look at Zephyr, our application, it's so important to, you know, stay diversified. Don't get over your ski tips. Don't make one big wager, whether it's growth or value. They really work together and they can help diversify you, especially when the growth and value styles are driven by the yield curve right now. So stay diversified and really focus more on your plan and your objectives moving forward. You don't want to get too far over your ski tips, especially I do think volatility is going to pick up as liquidity reduces moving forward and interest rates increase, and maybe as soon as late next year.
All right, we're going to put everyone on hold, but don't go anywhere because we've got earnings that we want to bring to you. Bookings is out, and Emily McCormick, a lot of us are planning travel for the holiday season. What's Bookings telling us about what's happened in the past?
Well, Adam, Booking Holdings is showing that a lot of people were traveling in the third quarter as well. We did see the company beat expectations on both the top and bottom line results. Adjusted earnings were a beat, those coming in at $37.70 a share, whereas Wall Street was looking for $32.23. And then on the top line, we saw revenue growth 77% over last year to come in at $4.7 billion. Now, of course, those comparisons were relatively easy here for Booking, considering that the pandemic was still in full force last year as well. But this was better than the estimate for $4.3 billion on the top line from Wall Street estimates. But again, still down from the $5 billion in the same quarter of 2019 for revenue before the pandemic. A couple of other closely watched metrics here also topped expectations. We saw gross bookings coming in at $23.7 billion versus the $21.6 billion expected, and rooms booked in the third quarter were up 44% year on year. Now, for a little bit more commentary here from Glenn Fogel, he's CEO of Booking Holdings. in this evening's press release, quote, we are pleased to report another quarter of sequential improvement in room night trends, which was primarily driven by better results in Europe. Revenue in our seasonally strongest third quarter was $4.7 billion, which was more than double the amount of revenue we recognized in the second quarter of 2021. Now, again, we are seeing those shares popping in the after hours, up more than 6.5% on the heels of these results, guys.
All right, thanks, Emily. We want to get over to Dan Holly because Roku taking a hit after hours. Dan, what are the numbers?
Yeah, big miss here for Roku. They expected, in terms of Q4, rather, they came in line with expectations for this quarter of $681 million in revenue, but they did miss on the player segment. That's where they actually sell the Roku players. That came in at $97.4 million. What the street was looking for was $122.95 million. Platform, though, that revenue where they sell ads beat expectations, $583 million. Expectations were $556 million. They say, though, going forward to Q4, that revenue is going to come in between $885 million and $900 million. Wall Street was expecting $946 million for Q4 revenue. Roku basically saying, look, we had revenue growth of 51% year over year for the quarter, but going into the coming quarter and the past quarter were hit by some of the increases in prices that they're seeing as a result of the supply chain crisis. So rather than passing that price on to consumers, they kind of bit the bullet there, and as a result, they were hit a little bit harder than they were expecting. They did also see some of the issues going into the coming quarter. They said gross player margin decreased 15% because of that. So obviously not a great quarter for Roku. We'll see if they can beat expectations next time around, but clearly a big miss here, and the stock's down as much as nearly 9%.
Ryan, it's not often that we get big expectations misses. And the reason I bring this up is that Sam Rowe in his most recent newsletter and ticker talked about the fact that companies, you know, if you do that, they did a study of this. It's 74% beat Wall Street expectations quarter after quarter after quarter, to the point of why do we even pay attention to that? So what you just heard about these companies missing, what should investors think when they hear about a company missing, especially when it's a company like Roku, where it's been growth, growth, growth for so long?
That's a great question. And I think there's a couple of things. Number one is a lot of these tech companies, whether it's Roku or Apple or Google, they're priced to perfection. Their valuations are very high. So they're expecting, and they have to deliver solid earnings and beat expectations. Even if they come in line, they're so highly valued. I think even in-line earnings and revenue can kind of turn off investors because it's not high enough to offset or those valuations. So I think that's number one. And two, you're exactly right. Every time we go into our earnings season, it seems like the estimates are much lower than, you know, as we move along through the earnings season. And I think maybe moving forward, these estimates and forecasts, maybe they should be ratcheted up a little bit more. So the bogeys, those benchmarks are a little bit different, more difficult to achieve. Because when, you know, it seems like companies that beat their earnings, they don't get quite the price movement as when companies miss their earnings estimates. And I think a lot of that is just price to perfection also.
Rhea, do you have any comment? I'm a little distracted, so forgive me. When we talk about these, and I realize as an economist, I'm not asking you an investment strategy, but we pay so much attention to how Wall Street sets us up for expectations, and it seems as if they always prepare us to overdo it.
I think there's a similar thing in the economy as well. I mean, we've been so accustomed to these kind of blockbuster growth rates that we had seen as we recovered from the pandemic. The second quarter was really kind of that peak. We did see a bit of a hit in the third quarter. And as we go into next year, we continue to expect a deceleration. But if you look at the larger scheme of things, we, for example, expect growth to decelerate from 5.8% this year to 3.5% roughly next year. But if you look at that 3.5%, that would still be higher than the pace of growth in any single year during the entire last expansion. So even though we are seeing some slowing in the economy overall, and likely with earnings going into next year, because we have these comparisons that will be difficult to continue to see increases in, we are still seeing a solid momentum in the economy. And so we still have an optimistic view, and we are recommending that investors remain overweight in the equities in their portfolios and underweight to fixed income, because we do expect that interest rates will continue to rise with that continued recovery in the economy.
Rhea Thomas and Ryan Nauman, thanks so much for joining us. We want